Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 7, Text Number 4. Yadhi vaham naya chakto Lokoyam nasta mangala Savishya chira sadho Nirashrita Yahi. When? Eva. Certainly. I am. This. Maya. By me. Chaktaha. Abandoned. Lokaha. The world. I am fish. Nashta mangalaha. Bereft of all auspiciousness or piety. Bhavishyati. It will be. Achirat. Very soon. Sadho. The saintly one. Kalina. Due to Kali. Api. Himself. Nirakritaha. Overwhelmed. Translation. O saintly Uddhava, in the near future I will abandon this earth. Then, being overwhelmed by the age of Kali, the earth will be bereft of all piety. Purport. Lord Krishna's plan was to bring Uddhava back to his own eternal abode after a brief delay. Because of Uddhava's extraordinary spiritual qualities, the Lord wanted to engage him in propagating his message among other saintly persons who were not yet advanced to the stage of pure devotional service. However, the Lord assured Uddhava that he would not be bereft of the Lord's association for even a moment. Also, because Uddhava had become a perfect master of his senses, he would never be afflicted by the three modes of material nature. In this way, before bringing Uddhava back to home, back to Godhead, the Lord empowered him to carry out a specific confidential mission. Whenever the supreme position of the personality of Godhead is not recognized, useless mental speculation becomes very prominent, and the safe and sure path of hearing perfect Vedic knowledge becomes covered by the chaos of mental concoction. At the present time, especially in the Western countries, literally millions of books are being published on hundreds and thousands of subjects. Yet, despite this proliferation of mental concoction, people remain totally in ignorance about the most fundamental issues of human life, namely, who am I? Where have I come from? Where am I going? What is my soul? What is God? The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is a reservoir of innumerable enchanting pastimes, and thus he is the source of innumerable varieties of pleasure. In fact, he is the ocean of eternal pleasure. When the eternal soul is bereft of the constitutional pleasure that comes from loving service to the Lord, he is overwhelmed and bewildered by material nature. He helplessly chases after material sense gratification, thinking that one material object is good and another bad. and constantly changes his assessment of what is good and what is bad. Thus he derives no peace or pleasure, is in constant anxiety, and is repeatedly thrashed by the cruel laws of nature in the form of birth, death, old age, and disease. In this way, the conditioned soul becomes a fit candidate to take birth in Kali Yuga, which is the epitome of misfortune. In Kali Yuga, the living entities who are already suffering so many tribulations mercilessly turn against one another. Human society in Kali Yuga becomes savagely violent, and men open slaughterhouses to butcher hundreds of millions of innocent creatures. Large-scale wars are declared, and millions of human beings, even women and children, are quickly annihilated. Unless the living entity recognizes the authority of the personality of Godhead, he remains a helpless victim in the clutches of Maya or material illusion. He concocts different solutions to release himself from Maya, but these solutions are themselves creations of Maya and thus cannot possibly release the conditioned soul. In fact, they only intensify his distress. In the next verse, Lord Krishna specifically warns Uddhava to avoid Kali Yuga and go back home, back to Godhead. Those of us who have already taken birth in Kali Yuga should also heed this advice and immediately take all necessary steps to go back to the Lord's eternal abode for a blissful life of perfect knowledge. The material world is never a happy place, especially during the fearful days of Kali Yuga. Yaivaham maya chakto lokam lokoyam nasya mangalaha bhavishyatcha chira chajyo kalinapi nirakritaha. O saintly Uddhava, in the near future I will abandon this earth. Then, being overwhelmed by the age of Kali, the earth will be bereft of all piety. So, Kali Yuga, this age of Kali, as Krishna describes, he is bereft of all piety. There's a statement here in the purport. When the eternal soul is bereft of the constitutional pleasure that comes from loving service to the Lord, he is overwhelmed and bewildered by material nature. He helplessly chases after material sense gratification, thinking that one material object is good and another bad, and constantly changes his assessment of what is good and what is bad. So then later it says, in this way the conditioned soul becomes a fit candidate to take birth in Kali Yuga, which is the epitome of misfortune. So, over the four yugas of Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Satya Yuga of course lasts for 1,200,000 years roughly. Treta Yuga for about 800,000 years, is that right? And Kali Yuga lasts for 430,000 years, Dwapara Yuga is about twice that. It's about 800. Treta Yuga is twice that. That is about 1,200,000. And Satya Yuga is about four times that, another 2 million years here. So after that's, of course, that's just one cycle of yugas, and generally the conditioned souls have been in the material world for many, many cycles of yugas, in fact many, many lifetimes of Brahma for some. You imagine how conditioned. And there are those who don't manage to become self-realizing, God-realized, and if they can't take the opportunity of Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Treta Yuga, they somehow end up in Kali Yuga. That's us. So very, very unfortunate. We've missed the bus several times. So this Kali Yuga is extremely misfortunate. Because the main reason, of course, is because Krishna or his various incarnations have their not presence. So that the Lord is called Tri-Yuga, or one who appears in three yugas. In Kali Yuga, actually the Lord is present, but in order for the symptoms of Kali Yuga to manifest, the Lord remains somewhat hidden. But actually he's still present. But in order for the really impious and unfortunate conditioned souls to suffer as they deserve due to stubborn attachment to sinful activities, then the Lord remains somewhat covered. In this way, they have no real understanding of what they should and shouldn't do, and they're just absorbed in mental speculation as to what is good and what is bad, and they really just make up their own rules as they go along. Whatever suits their particular desire for sinful activity, then they create some philosophy that this is good, and when there's something which they don't like, then they make out that that is bad. So people are just absorbed in sinful activity, inventing what is good and what is bad, but they have no real standard of understanding, because the Lord's pastimes are not visible. He appears to be absent. Srila Prabhupada gives a nice analogy that one devotee, his father, he said to Srila Prabhupada that my father, he eats meat, and he's very impious, and yet he always he seems to be God conscious, because he always says that I'm protected by God. I'm always protected by God. So he was asking Srila Prabhupada, how do you explain this anomaly? That here's someone who's very impious, big meat eater, and yet they feel that they're protected by God. So Srila Prabhupada's response was that that just means that his turn hasn't come yet. That's all. That his turn of suffering is on its way. He's feeling he's protected by God, but he's actually just waiting for the reaction is coming. So then he gave the example that there's wet stool and dry stool, and the wet stool was laughing at the dry stool, thinking, you're going on the fire for the cooking. So You know, in this way, he was pointing out that this devotee's father was like the whetstool. You know, just a little time, becomes dry, he's also going on the fire. So, in this way, although they have their conceptions of what is good and what is bad, ultimately it's all very, very unfortunate, and everyone in Kali Yuga is really waiting for their good thrashing by the material energy. Everyone in Kali Yuga gets a real good thrashing. Anyone here not had a good thrashing? Nanda? You're waiting? You've had? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, thrashings are not meant for the devotees. So. What's that? There's a verse actually in the Srimad Bhagavatam that I think it's in relation to Dhritarashtra, you know, how he left home and, you know, like a great Kshatriya went towards the Himalayas, describing that he was like a, you know, someone who's had a good thrashing, you know, and now he's, you know, ready to walk the path of liberation at that. And we saw with Dhritarashtra that, you know, the thrashing that he got. This is even in the presence of Krishna, but although Krishna was present, he didn't want to acknowledge Krishna as the supreme controller, the supreme personality of Godhead. And he even said, even after he had good instruction, he said that, I actually know that Krishna is God, and I know that what he's saying is right, but I'm going to do what I'm going to do anyway. You know? And because of that stubborn obstinacy, then of course, you know, all his relatives were killed, you know, he lost his kingdom, he was humiliated, you know, he was totally thrashed by Krishna's arrangement. And in the end, in a very with nothing left, his body, you know, falling to pieces, all the organs starting to fail. This, you know, in this way, he wandered off to take to the path of liberation, at the very fag end of his life, and there was nothing left for him because everything had been just totally demolished, and he was a very broken man. There was nothing left, nothing in the material world whatsoever. So, of course, that's Dhritarashtra, even in the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see in Kali Yuga, it's even worse. People get, you know, a greater thrashing. I was telling Dandakaranya the other day about a friend of my parents. Who's just a very typical example. He was about 70, and he was working still as a furniture removalist. So, you know, carrying pianos and cupboards, and, you know, so he was a strong man, but it was hard work. It's still at the age of 70, but he was doing that. And one of the reasons why he'd been working, even though he could have retired, he didn't need the money, was that his dream was to have a boat. And so he had this, if I get this boat, in my whole life, you know, I've just had so much hell, but if I can get that boat and just get out on that water, then, you know, I get a few moments of happiness before I die, I guess. So the problem was, his wife was a compulsive gambler. So he was saving and depositing all his money in the bank. And they'd actually also inherited about, you know, $300,000 or $400,000 from relatives. So there was $300,000 or $400,000 in the bank, plus there should have been maybe another $100,000. So he was expecting to be about $500,000 there. He's gonna get a nice boat and go cruising. So one day he went to the bank and there was nothing. Nothing at all. And he thought it was a mistake. So he went to his wife and asked her, you know, where's all the money? She said, there must be some mistake. And then she admitted that I've actually put all of that through the pokies. So within about a month, he died. You know what he died of? He died of a broken heart. Just, you know, completely thrashed by the material energy. But they've just done a survey, and they've medically, statistically proven that women, and, you know, men also, but they've done this survey with women, have a lot of emotional trauma, difficulty due to, you know, the way life, you know, just thrashes them. They have twice the amount of chance of dying, you know, from some heart-related illness as women who are happy. So, you know, because of the fact that they're so miserable, that it actually increases their chance of dying early and by double. They, a lot of people are like that. Sometimes you see that people, you know, someone's lived with their husband or their wife for, you know, 50 years, and then the partner dies, and then within a few months or a few weeks, the other partner just dies because they just, you know, they lose their will to live, and, you know, just a little something which ordinarily they should survive, but they just die very easily. So in this way, you know, this is the nature in Kali Yuga, that a lot of people there, although they're dying from different illnesses, no doubt, but they're also dying with a broken heart. They're, you know, actually being completely thrashed by the material energy. And the problem is that it is because they have no standard of what is happiness. They have no idea. In the presence of Krishna, one can actually see what is the standard of happiness. But when Krishna or his various incarnations are not present, then there's only mental concoction of how to live in this world and be happy. Generally, you know, people come up with all sorts of crazy ideas, how we're just like animals, and therefore, you know, it's the survival of the fittest, and it's dog eat dog, and use your survival instincts to just make sure that, you know, you've got what you want, and if you have to, you know, take from someone else, but you've got to survive, just like an animal. You know, so people, they have this sort of mentality about life. That's how they see other human beings, that, you know, this person is my competitor for existence. You know, they're not looking, here is my brother, here is my sister, you know, here is my dear friend. They're thinking, you know, here is food, here is money, I have to get this to survive. And everyone else is my competitor. We actually, in the Bhagavad Gita, you see that sort of mentality, where in the 16th chapter, Krishna says that, you know, he is my enemy. I have killed this one. I have killed that one. So, you know, because people have no understanding of how to live in this world, they come up with all sorts of crazy philosophies as to how they can be happy in this world. And, you know, really they're just living like animals. They, you know, that the only thing they understand is the happiness of an animal, like two-legged animals. But actually we see in Krishna's pastimes how one can actually be happy, how one lives. we have the Srimad Bhagavatam, and in the Srimad Bhagavatam there is the pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna. So although Krishna appears to be absent, for those who actually want to, in Kali Yuga, he actually appears in the covered incarnation, just like Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna said that when, you know, as is described by Srila Vyasadeva, that when Krishna left, he remained in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Krishna's pastimes are non-different from Krishna. And by meditating upon those pastimes, it is the same as if Krishna were personally present. And one then knows how to live one's life, and every aspect of one's life and every aspect of relationships, there is a standard for happiness. Just like we look at the activities of Mother Yasoda. Mother Yasoda, for she shows the and you know, we see the activities of Mother Yasoda, the gopis, Krishna's queens, so many different women in all different walks of life. We see, you know, Queen Kunti, there are the lives of very, very elevated Kshatriya women, the lives of the Brahmana women, there are the lives of the Vaishya women, the lives of the Sudra women, and even the lives of those who are not quite within the Vanashram. All those different personalities are actually there in Srimad Bhagavatam, and through their example one can see that in relationship to Krishna there is happiness, a standard of happiness, spiritual happiness for all of them. In this day and age, in the age of Kali, both men and women have no idea how to be happy. Men don't know how to be men, women don't know how to be women. That they have no idea of even the basic fundamental understanding as, you know, how does taking birth. Of course, we're not these bodies, but still, if one takes birth in a man's body, one takes birth in a woman's body, there are certain natural proclivities, activities by which one becomes well situated, happy, lives a normal existence. But people don't know how to do that. You know, even the most basic of things. Mothers will have children, but they don't know that if they look after their children and love their children, they'll be happy. They don't know that. It seems like such a natural thing, but they in many circumstances, of course, mothers see the children as little person who is a disturbance to my happiness. It's very common. You know, with mothers, they'll look at the children, are you disturbing my happiness? They don't understand that, you know, by looking after, nurturing and making sure they're, you know, very, very happy, that they'll become happy. It's a very natural thing. We see this in Krishna's pastimes. You see how Mother Yasoda, she doted on Krishna. The very, very advanced devotees, they meditate upon Ashtakalya Lila, Krishna's eightfold pastimes that manifest throughout the course of the day, beginning from in these pastimes, of course, they meditate upon what Krishna is doing now. So for an advanced devotee, at any particular time of the day or night, they understand what Krishna is actually doing at the present time and what his associates are doing. And by meditating upon these, they can understand what are the normal activities for that time of day, for that season, for that, you know, for someone who is in the position of a man or a woman or what have you. By comparing, just like in the morning, Krishna wakes up. Of course, when Krishna wakes up, he wakes up in the groves of Vrindavan, the Srimati Radharani, and the Vrindadevi. She asks the parrots and different birds to come and speak to Radha and Krishna and wake them up, because their elders would soon be waking up, and they should be home in bed, and not they should not have snuck out in the middle of the night to meet each other. So then they wake up, of course, and as lovers do, they find it very, very difficult to separate, but then they somehow or another manage to separate, and they put on their clothes and go running back through the forest to try and get home before, you know, Mother Yasoda and Kirtida find out that I'm in the bed. Of course, this, you know, and they're so, even though Krishna is God, you know, he's very concerned not to upset his mother. Again, you see, that's normal. You know, for children, people don't know that these days. You know, one should not upset one's mother, one should not upset one's father. Again, people feel that, you know, once you get to the age of maybe 12 or 13, parents are really obsolete, they're no longer necessary. In fact, they're really, really annoying. That's the general consensus, and then that sort of, you know, just gets worse and worse. But, which is interesting, because when I was in Auckland, New Zealand, I was talking with Mahavishnu Swami, and I was washing his plate. We'd just taken prasad. He wouldn't let me, but I basically took it off him. So he asked me, you know, how is your mother and father? And I said, well, I haven't seen my mother and father for about 10 years. He said, oh, that's not very good. And I said, oh, they're meeting this, you know. I don't really, you know. He said, that's not very good that you know. He said, still, you're a grihastha, and that's your mother and father, and you should be serving them. And, you know, I tried to sort of fumble out, oh, you know, they're not devotees or anything. And, you know, he just completely rejected, without any doubt, without any whim. You know, why are you not offering service to your mother and father? And of course I thought about that, and I realised that, you know, whatever their position, actually, that's what I you know, we have that responsibility. Of course, as devotees, all responsibilities are absolved by surrendering to Krishna. But the interesting thing there is that then if we want our children as devotees to understand what their role is as children and how to serve their mother and father, if we don't give them an example, then what would they follow? So in other words, although many of the devotees, their parents may be unqualified, but if they don't show some sort of an example as to teach the children, then the children will grow up thinking, oh, you know, you didn't look after your mum and dad, so I'm not going to look after you. That's, you know, that's what people do. And anyway, I took that to heart, what he said, and when I came back to Australia, I've always made a point to look after my mother and father and sort of give up that mentality. And it's quite surprising how they have done so much service over the years for Krishna in different ways, you know, just being very tolerant with them. And it's done them a lot of good, and of course they've helped me in so many different ways when I was raising children. Very, very handy to have grandparents around. That's their natural role, of course. Grandparents, they're the best as far as helping to raise children. So in this way there was a very nice reciprocation, and they become very, very favourable to Krishna. But even in those circumstances, it's actually a good thing to, you know, look after one's parents. So of course, Krishna, he sets that example, even though he's God, he sets that example as well, that, you know, Mother Yasoda, she'll go into the bedroom, she'll see that I'm not there, she'll be, you know, in complete anxiety, she'll chastise me. In this way, so Krishna is, you know, and Radharani the same. Of course, Radharani was fearful of her mother-in-law, I think, yeah, so it was even worse. So, they went running back through the bushes. Of course, so, you know, Krishna's putting on Radharani's clothes, and Radharani's putting on Krishna's clothes. They're in so much anxiety, you know, that we won't disturb the elders. And so they sneak home and jump in the bed and get under the covers, and then just in time, so that the elders come in and begin to, you know, wake them up and what have you. So, in the different pastimes, and of course then Krishna will arise, and so many different, personalities will help to Mother Yasoda, will arrange with so many different arrangements to wash him and clean him. Of course, Krishna goes and first milks the cows, and then, you know, he comes back, has a bath, and while he's having a bath, then Radharani is cooking. Mother Yasoda has sent some messengers, you go and get Srimati Radharani. You ask her to come and cook for Krishna, because she has the benediction that whatever she cooks turns to nectar, and she's been given this benediction by Devasa Muni. So Mother Yasoda will have Srimati Radharani cook, and Srimati Radharani is very, very anxious, you know, to cook for Krishna. And of course, again, it is when you hear it, it appears to be very, very ordinary. But for many, many women, the thought of having to cook for your partner is an obnoxious thought. I'm not cooking for that man. although it's, you know, it is a natural propensity for a woman who's very, very much in love with her partner, she'll be happy to want to cook and do so many different things. As we know, there's that saying that the weight of a man's heart is through his stomach. But and Krishna, of course, he is very, very eager to accept, because he is God, he doesn't need to eat. But because she has, you know, the secret ingredient in Radharani's cooking is her love. There's so much mahabhava in her cooking that he wants to eat that. Sometimes when Srimati Radharani and Krishna sit to eat, Radharani wants to eat Krishna's food, and Krishna wants to eat, you know, what's on Radharani's plate, because they just want to exchange. There's an exchange of love. The cooking, in one sense, is just an opportunity. Any opportunity. That is the point there. That according to one's natural situation, natural psychophysical makeup, that one takes advantage of one's qualities and talents in order to take any opportunity to somehow please the beloved. That's a very, very natural. In Kali Yuga, that's not how people evoke love. People, what happens in relationships, of course, in Kali Yuga, is that it is based upon you know, a competition that I will become superior to you, and then I will force you to, you know, to love and respect me, and you know, I will force you to be in this relationship and you know, like me. As I say, you cannot demand respect or love. It is something which is commanded. But a lot of relationships are like that. Instead of looking for ways to please the partner, it is this a relationship of manipulation and competition for superiority, whereby one controls a relationship in order to make the relationship happen or be maintained. There's no real understanding of how to, you know, develop loving reciprocation. So anyway, in these different pastimes, we actually see a standard of happiness. It's not just that meditating upon Krishna's pastimes is what people do if they're disgusted with the material world. I'm disgusted with the material world, I've got to think about something. Krishna's pastimes are really interesting. Alright, let me just, you know, meditate upon that through the day, and that'll get me through life until I die, and then, you know, hopefully we'll go back to the spiritual world. That's not the point. The point is that without understanding what Krishna's standard is, we have no idea what happiness is. And if we actually meditate upon Krishna's pastimes, then in every instance, and if we do that throughout the whole course of the day, and for everything we need to understand, how do I do this? We have some, you know, how do I do this? What should I do? How do I do this in complete ecstasy, in transcendental bliss? How do I do this activity in such a way that I become absorbed in transcendental ecstasy? In order to do that, one has to meditate upon the pastimes of Krishna. And then ordinary activities, which we do throughout the course of the day, to take on this transcendent anandam buri vadanam chaito dapanam vajanam bhavamahadavagana vatanam shreya karava chandrika vatadanam vijivaro jivanam paripranam pranam vitasvadanam. Anandam buri vadanam, that's the point. That this Sankirtan movement, there is nectar at every step. For those who actually meditate upon Krishna's pastimes, then everything they're doing, you know, what they're doing at home with their family, as a child, as a son, as a daughter, as a husband, as a wife, as a friend, as a well-wisher, everything takes on a transcendental, ecstatic nature because it's done, illumined by Krishna's own personal example. So if we, you know, throughout the course of the day, as soon as we forget Krishna, and Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita, if you do not remember me, then immediately you'll be lost. But if you always think of me, you'll pass over all obstacles and eventually come to me by my grace. So if we think of Krishna, of course, to meditate upon Krishna's transcendental pastimes, Ashta Kaliya Leela, throughout the eight different times of the day, that's not possible. That is something that liberated souls can do, but first we have to practice thinking of Krishna at all. Yeah. And to do that, we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. If we can just if we can just think of Krishna for an hour and a half, and properly chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that is, and if we can do that day after day, then gradually we, take our conditioned mind, which is absorbed in the muck of Kali Yuga, where there's no happiness and illusion and fear, if we can take our mind, which is absorbed in these external things, and at least chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds, 16 good rounds, following four regular principles, so that they're really they're good rounds, gradually the mind becomes attracted to Krishna, that purification, and we get a taste for thinking of Krishna. And then it becomes much more easy to think of Krishna. And when we can think of Krishna's name, then gradually his form will always be there within our minds. And as Krishna's form is always there within our minds and hearts, then the qualities of Krishna are naturally, they will become manifest within our minds and within our hearts. And when Krishna's qualities become manifest, then his pastimes will automatically manifest. So in this way, by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, becoming purified, gradually we get the ability to go through the day and try and meditate upon Krishna's pastimes, so that we're always, whatever we're doing, we can do that with the standard of real spiritual happiness. And then we come to the point where the next point of advancement is that automatically, without any separate endeavour on one's part, Krishna's pastimes are just automatically manifesting within one's mind just throughout the course of the day. One's not even trying, it's just it becomes just an automatic manifestation. But in the beginning we must practice, try to actually think of Krishna 24 hours a day. And to do that we must chant Hare Krishna very, very nicely. And if we can do that, then we're not in Kali Yuga. And Krishna is not absent. Kali Yuga means Krishna is absent. If Krishna is present, how can there be Kali Yuga? So, if we're always thinking of Krishna, we're not in Kali Yuga. We're in, Krishna's transcendental time. So, I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. A couple of minutes here. Maybe I'll just quickly summarise, finish off very quickly the pastimes of Krishna. We got up to Krishna and Radharani, ran back home. Mother Yasoda, Krishna went to milk the cows. Srimati Radharani came and assisted Radharani and Mother Rohini, and they cooked for Krishna. And then around about 8:30 in the morning, Radharani will go home. She'll get a signal from Krishna as to there'll be some secret meeting later in that day in the crows of Vrindavan. So she'll go back home and she'll be instructed by her mother-in-law, you have to go and worship the sun god. So that gives her a good reason to go into the forest of Vrindavan, to the temple there. And Krishna also, he will go with his friends and all the cows, and he will take them into the groves of Vrindavan. And then at some stage he manages, after a lot of fun with his friends, he will manage to sneak off. Maybe a couple of his friends who understand that he's going to meet Srimati Radharani, perhaps we can go and, enjoy with Krishna and, help him in his loving affairs with Srimati Radharani. So Krishna will then go off into, around about 10:30, he will sneak off somewhere, and he will enjoy beautiful pastimes with Srimati Radharani and with some of his friends. And then around about 3:30, it's time for Krishna to come back home. So then Radharani and Krishna, they will head towards their respective homes. Krishna will come back through the villages, and everyone will take the opportunity to see Krishna as he's coming back home. Even the demigods, they actually come down secretly. Even the residents of Vrindavan, they do not see, but the demigods come down, and they also watch, because you know the other pastimes they have no real access to. But Krishna will allow them certain access to his pastimes. And as they're coming back home, and Krishna is all covered in dust, and they will take the opportunity to offer obeisances and take the dust from his lotus feet. And then when Krishna, he will go back home, and Mother Yasoda will prepare a nice meal, and Radharani will actually be at her home, and she'll be cooking some preparations as well, which she sends through her different friends to Krishna. And Krishna will take bath and do different things, and then he will take his meal, and then he will some of Radharani's messengers, they will take some of those remnants and take them back to Srimati Radharani. No, I wasn't calling for yet, but I will in a minute. Okay. Sure. So gradually, after some time, Krishna spending some time with his parents and friends, later in the evening, of course, Mother Yasoda will put Krishna to bed, and then again he will sneak out into the forest, and late at night he will spend his times with Srimati Radharani. So it's interesting, because if you look at Krishna's pastimes throughout the course of 24 hours, he doesn't sleep very much. He does get some sleep. He gets a few minutes here and there, and he's probably dreaming about his pastimes with Srimati Radharani. But Krishna's dreaming and sleeping is factual as well. In his expansion as Mahavishnu, So I've been instructed we have to finish up soon, so I have to go and get some prasadam. So in this way, if we meditate upon these pastimes of Krishna, then we can, know how to be happy in this life. Everything is there. It's not just a way of escaping material existence. And yet, automatically, by meditating upon Krishna's pastimes, all of Kali Yuga, just disappears. So I'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.